Start your day the Torah way, Rabbi Yeshua Jacobson.
Should I start?
Yeah.
Okay. Morning, Rabbi Yisai. Morning. We're moving towards Shavuos, and someone once observed that they don't necessarily feel it. They don't feel they're moving towards Shavuos. So I heard a nice way of looking at it, if you're into science a bit. If somebody would ask you, how fast are you moving right now? And I don't mean how quickly are you picking up your coffee mugs or whatever else you're doing, moving your pens. So how fast are we moving? So I think, I can't tell you the exact speed, but we are probably moving hundreds of miles an hour. How is that? So if you take a different perspective, you go into space and you see how fast is the Earth rotating around the sun. We're not standing still at all. It may feel like it, quite a relaxed attitude here in the morning. We're actually at vast, vast speeds. So what does that show us? That you may not experience something, you may not feel it to your senses, that's something what the reality is. But in fact, that doesn't define the truth. And we have to appreciate we are rushing towards Shavuos. We are about to be Mekabel the Torah. And the other way as well. People think, they imagine what they feel is the reality. I've never attended Baruch Hashem, but apparently in California there are prayer groups that meet on the beaches or on a beach, and they have a guitar. I'm talking on a Friday night. They have a bonfire. All of this doesn't make any sense, obviously, but this is what they want to do. And they'll play guitar, and the lady rabbi leads this prayer service, and they all feel good. Well, what does feeling good have to do with the Ratz and Hashem? Not that much. So it goes both ways. What we feel, what we sense, is doesn't define reality. So this may feel like any other Wednesday in the year, but in fact, we are just about to enter the Shlishis Yemei HaGbalah. And the relevance is, we've got to get ready for our reinfusion of the Torah on Shavuos, Torah Kedosha, and we should be excited. Whether we realize it, we feel it in our chush or not, that's not the point. That's not reality. So I'd like to begin today with a mashal, which will bring out, I think, a point, probably about a medrash you've heard. But the mashal is, there was once a rich man, and he had a very profitable big business, and he was getting older, and he wanted to retire. So he didn't want to just close the company and say goodbye. He wanted to have someone, one of his descendants, someone he was close with, should take it over. So he had three sons-in-law. So he said to himself, how am I going to do this? So he told his PA, call in the three sons-in-law one at a time into my office. I want to see who's the most matim, who's the most suited for the task. So the first one comes in, and he says to him, I've got a job for you to do today, and it's an important job. What I want you to do is go and meet with the accountants of the firm, and I want you to present to them the vision, the financial vision for the future of this company. So the boy turns white, and he doesn't know what to do with himself. And he says to his father-in-law, I never did well in maths. So he realizes he's not going to go. He calls the second one in. He says, I want you to go and visit the factory where we make productions. So again, the boy turns pale, and he doesn't know, he thinks this is impossible. He says to the father, I'm not good with practical things. But they both go on their way to do their assigned tasks and manage whatever they can manage, but they don't stand a chance. The third one comes in, and he says to him, I want you to go to the board meeting, and I want you to listen on the discussions of the managers, the vice presidents, and to come back and tell me what they said. So the PA is watching all of this, and he can't help himself. He says, this is outrageous. If you wanted the third son-in-law to be the takeover for the company, why didn't you just say so? Well, what kind of a setup was this? The first two you gave these impossible challenges, and the third one, you're basically giving him the day off. So the man says, not at all. What I wanted from the third one was to see, could he sit quietly and listen to others? If he could do that, then he has a future in this company. And for him, that was hard. So this mashal is supposed to answer when you hear there's a famous medrash, I know you've all heard it, but we'll just go through it quickly, in the Sifri, about when Hashem wanted to give the Torah, so he didn't just say, right, it's for the Jewish people. We know he offered it to all the nations, and we'll go through them, and then we'll see there's a big kasha on this. So first he offers it to Bnei Esav, and they ask, Maksiv Bei, what's written in it? So Hashem says, Lo Tirzach, you're not allowed to murder. So they say, wait a minute, this is not like us. I mean, it's not going to suit us, because Pasuk says, Yadam Yadei Esav, Harbachot, Tichia. This is how we exert control in the world. This is our identity. We can't live with that. So he goes to Ben Amon and Moav, and he says, you want it? He said, well, what's written in Maksibbe? He said, no, if you're not allowed to do Niuf. So they say, wait a minute, think about our history. Our whole Maus, our whole creation was through Znus. How are we going to fit with this? Bnei Yishmael, the last of the group, they say, what's in it? Lo Signov. So they say, we can't live like that. We're listim by definition. So the Pasuk says, and so he went. Now you could ask a very big question on this. So what happened with the Yidden? So we say the Yidden were very clever. What did they do? They said, Naseh v'nishma. Clever, yes, it's clever. But there's no test in that. I mean, the test is, I suppose, we're going to do it. It's a great thing. But if you imagine, you're giving out, like in our moshel of this, to the sons-in-law, you give two of them, three of them in this case, three nations, this very hard test, and somebody jumps up and says, Dad, I'll take over the company, no problem. So you say, Shkoyach, you want to take over the company, but I didn't test you. I didn't see if you're fit for the job. So what was the difficulty for the Yidden that they had a test that they had to overcome to be worthy of the Torah? The other nations, you find that point of weakness in them, and you say, you have to do this, and they say, we can't do that, so we can't have the Torah. But the Yidden, well, where was the test? So the answer I heard, which was, I think it's you appreciate it once you hear it, the test was these Yimei Hagbalah. Was to make boundary around Har Sinai, and that was a test for the Yidden. It's not presented as such. We'd say, where's the test in that? What was hard about it? If I would tell you to stay away from, what was the consequence if you got too close to the mountain? It says, Misa. So if I tell you, you know, by the train stations, or by the train tracks, it says, don't cross the tracks, they're all electrified, risk of electrocution, electrocution and death. Has there anybody here been really tempted to say, but I really want to run across those tracks? I just like the thrill of it. If you know that there's a risk of death, so then it's pretty easy. But so where was the challenge in this? And to bring out the point that this must have been very challenging, consider the psukim. Moshe wasn't told just once to make a hagbala for the Yidden, like the first pasuk Yud Beis says, V'igbalta esa'am saviv, make a boundary for the people, leimor, telling them, hishomru lechem alois bahar, don't go up onto the mountain, and gabu, they shouldn't touch even the edge of it, kol negea bahar, most you must, they'll die. So we got the basic, the tzivoy. Make this hagbala, tell them to stay out, it's clear, crystal clear, don't go near the mountain. But then, eight psukim later, once again, Hashem repeats the tzivoy. Yom Hashem El Moshe, raid, go back down. Hey, Ba'am, Pen, Yehersu, Es Hashem, make sure that they don't split their camps, split their ranks there, and rush for the mountain, Liros, to see the Gilui Shechina, V'nafum, and Rav, and a lot of people will die. So, okay, so Hashem makes the point, but listen to Moshe's reply. This is very unusual. Where, you can think through all of Chumash, maybe you'll find it. Where do we find that Hashem tells Moshe to do something and he says it's not necessary? Is there any such case? Do you think it's not necessary? So why would he say that? Obviously Hashem tells you something, even if he tells you twice. And there are things, there are mitzvahs that are told twice. We never see Moshe saying, let's say we find the kosher birds. It's told two whole parshas about it. We don't see Moshe saying the second time around, they already heard this one. Just tell it, if you have a little difference, tell us a little difference. But you don't have to repeat all the birds again. No, the Torah will repeat things twice. So, but that's not what Moshe says here. In Pasuk Chaf Gimel, he says, "Yomer Moshe al Hashem lo yuchal ha'am la'alos." They can't come up. Why are you telling me to go back down? They're not going to come El Har Sinai. Ki ata ha'edosa bani. You've already warned us about this. And Rashi says, listen to this Rashi. Eini tzorich. I don't need to tell them. Lai behem. I don't need to tell them this. Shrei moistrim v'aimdim heim. They've already been warned. What kind of a conversation is this? Like, Hashem tells you to do it, and you say, we don't need to. And Hashem says to Moshe, well, go and do it anyway. Pasuk chaf dalad. V'yomer alav Hashem leich reid. Go back down. Tell them, I don't want them to run towards the mountain. Yes, lest they die as a consequence. And on this, Rashi says, this is the pshat. What I'm going to tell you is a bit deeper, but Rashi says the pshat. Rashi says, why did Hashem require to be told twice? Rashi says, "Vehei behem shenis." Yes, go and tell them a second time. Shemazrizin esa adam koydim ma'isa v'chayzrim v'mezrizim ma'isa b'shas ma'isa. Human psychology is such that if you tell someone in advance, so they'll listen. But it's nothing like, I think the example I came up with was the people that are going to jump out of planes to do skydiving with the parachutes on. As far as I know, I hope, they train them on the ground and they say, you're going to be there, you're going to see this, and then when the time comes, pull the cord. Right? I'm sure they tell them that. If they don't, like, how are they supposed to guess? Anyway, but as they're jumping out the plane, I'm almost certain they're going to shout at them, remember to pull the cord. But they already know that. They don't want to die. They don't want to jump to their death. It's true, but pshat is, like Rashi is saying, something is going on right now, the excitement, something about it. We're not taking any chances. We're telling you b'shas ma'isa a second time. And that's the pshat. So I wouldn't, but the fact that it had to be repeated, and Moshe is not sure it has to be repeated, and Hashem says, no, it does. It seems there was something pretty challenging here, that this was they're facing death, and yet they're going to run up the mountain. What in the world was the hava mina to run up the mountain? So on that, I'm going to try to say, I hope a deeper idea as to what was the challenge and why was it necessary to have a second sivui to stay off. In fact, the Medrash says that Moshe was praised by Hashem for asking. He said, Hashem said to Moshe, you asked well. Why did I tell you a second time? And the basic answer is because in the second sivui is something being added. It sounds the same. Don't come up the mountain. They want to rush up. They're going to die. But the Medrash says there's something being added, which I'll bring out what was being added. And this is based on the Sefer Mea Shiloach from the Ishbitzer in Parshas Amor, where he writes an unusual subject. He writes about there are five things that people might come up with tainas, with disgruntled about things that happen in the world. I'm not sure whether they're were justified or not, but he says a person could think like this. So one of them, I'm going to tell you the end of this year. I heard this idea in a shir. I'm going to tell you the end of this year because the end of this year is so surprising it'll wake you up in the morning. And then we'll have to figure out what in the world does this mean. The Magid Shir was saying the shir and he said, so we should all daven, this was his concluding words, we should all daven that we should be a Kohen Baal Mum. Now, why should we daven for that? I mean, what does that mean? So he explained, what's the idea of a Kohen Baal Mum? A Kohen Baal Mum is one of these five claims. He's confused, this Kohen Baal Mum. What does he say to Hashem? Look, you made me a Kohen. You want me to be amongst B'nai Aaron. But then you give me a Mum. So what's the problem? On the one hand, I'm made and my co-creation is to serve you. On the other hand, you've made me in a way that I can't serve you. So I'm a stira in intrinsic contradiction. So what do you want from me? Do you want me to serve or not to serve? So what am I? Am I a Kohen or not? So apparently the Rogat Shiver says that you're both. You're a Kohen and a Zar. Now that's a very novel idea because a Zar to us sounds like a non-Kohen. So how do you put the two together? But he says they both are true. How do we see this? For example, the Kohen is allowed to eat from Kodshim. There are a few avoiders which are shaykh to him in a very small way. I think taking out the deshin is one of them. And he can work in the mikdash. He can check the eitzim for the haktorah. But coming to bring the korbanos, not at all. He's not allowed to do as we know as mafurish. So the question stands, what exactly is he? Well, he's a bit of both. Now, what does this have to do with a bigger picture? So he's got a personal issue. But what does it have to do with Klal Yisrael? What does it have to do with us? And the answer is, it has to do with the Hagbalah that we're discussing by Har Sinai. Because on the one hand, we turn up at Har Sinai, we're ready to receive the Torah, we're ready to be as close as possible to Hashem, and then he says, make a Hagbalah to keep them away. So the Yiddish people could say, what's going on over here? Do you want us to come? Do you not want us to come? Do you want us to be here? Are we supposed to be as close as possible or not? Well, we understand, I think, intuitively what's going on. But it's basically there are boundaries. Even if I'm going to give you, Hashem says, the best present that there ever was, but there are still boundaries that are going to contain the present and your acceptance of it. It means I'm giving you something, but it's not on your terms. Yes, it's a wonderful gift. Yes, it's all for your benefit, but terms and conditions apply. So we are supposed to come with this enormous yearning for Ruchnius, on the one hand, but on the other hand, we're supposed to have in mind that there is a boundary to that enjoyment, to that pleasure, to that vacus. And this is the great test for Am Yisrael. Why? Because and this is the punchline of what we're, what we get a glimpse more of our identity. We know that, why do we hear so much about Yishmael and Esav and Ammon and Moab? Like, okay, so they're not the most pure people, and these were their taivas, and this is their problems. What does it have to do with us? So the pshat is we're seeing that this was their identity in a very deep way. They couldn't get away from it. In the same way, the test for us, their identity for us was, we have such a cheshek, such a desire to be close to Hashem, such a yearning to be close to Hashem, that it's no less of a test for us to overcome this challenge than it was for them. To tell I don't know, the Russians to stop their war, well, they're not going to do that. Their nature is, I mean, go figure out how much they must love warfare to get involved with that. But that's it's imprinted in their whole neshamas what they are. So lahavdil elef avdolas, who we are is she'ifas to be closer and closer and closer to Hashem. So if we're told, you want that, that's very good, that's great, but you know there are boundaries. And those boundaries are what's going to make the giving of the Torah the mutzlach. I'll give you an example of this, and you'll see how it comes up in Chazal, in marriage. And one way, a man is given a wife, but then the Torah steps in and says, but she's not available to you the whole time. There are times when she's a nida, etc., etc. She's, yes, this is for you. This is going to be your shlemus. This is going to be the greatest potential will be brought out through this institution. But on the other hand, it's not available to you the whole time. And this is, does what for us? It builds, brings the kedusha into the marriage. And if you want a silly raya for this, by the goyim, there's a concept which is called the seven-year itch, which basically means that the goyim, after about 7 years, I don't know how they figured this out, they get tired of their spouses, and they start to look elsewhere. So they pointed out that the yidden don't suffer from this itch, and we don't need any creams, but whatever it is, this doesn't seem to affect Yiddish marriages. In fact, sadly, there's a reputation in America that some goyish women are looking to marry yidden because they know they're going to have a higher quality marriage. What nobody realizes in those kinds of circles is that some of the harchakas and the dinim that are shaykh to halachic marriages, they won't have the benefit of. Anyway, what does this have to do with shavuos? So shavuos, the al-sheikh points out that there's a comparison. We count 7 days, 7 weeks, 7 times 7. And the al-sheikh says, based on Chazal, that this is not by chance the number 7, and it has to do with nidus. What's pshat? It says, when Hashem, I'm going to paraphrase what Al-Sheikh says, that Hashem came to be metahir the Yidden from the tomb of Mitzrayim and the Avodah Zorah there. So he said, what's the process you need to go through? You need to go through seven weeks, 7 days, which is like Shimshilena the Isha Dova Soferis Shivas Nakiyim, that is comparable to a woman who's removing from her the tumah of her nidus. So too, Klal Yisrael was to be counting these 7 weeks. So on the one hand, you could say it's an idea of removing impurity. But there are other people who have to move impurity. There's Tumas Mace, who knows what else. Why did Hashem compare us to a nida? And on that, I think the answer could be is to bring out this concept of marriage. That we know that the Matan Torah was compared to a chasana, the giving the Torahs like the ksuva and all of that. But the preparation as well as shaykh, the seven times seven, is this idea is that we're coming into a marriage where there are boundaries. It's not a lahavdil, a hefker marriage. It's a marriage where there's going to be a place for kedusha and also a place for building the kedusha by separating. My Rebbe, Rabbi Naftali Kaplan, told me about 25 years ago when I was a bocher and a very enthusiastic young man. He said, even if you could stay in the base medrash 16 hours a day, which I'm not saying I ever did, but he said, even if you could stay there the whole day, he said, I don't recommend it. He said, find something else to do for some of the time of the day, because if you can have unlimited access to something, you will burn out. Meaning, it's such a good thing, but too much of it is going to overwhelm you. So all of this should remind us of another historic event, which was Adam Arishan in Gan Eden. He was told, you can have everything. And everything was ganz fine. There's lots of good things to have there. But there was a boundary. You cannot have the Eitz Hadas. And that's very similar. What did he want? He had she'ifas to know Hashem more. And he's being told, yes, you can have this experience being very, very close to Hashem, but don't go over the limit. And that's very matim. When we think about it, we say that by Har Sinai I received the Torah, so we went back to the matzav of Adam Arishan Kodem Achet. So it means we were going through the experience as a nation again, of having to stand up at the test that Adam had failed. Adam had been told, stand back a bit, don't have the Eitz Hadas. So we were being told, yes, you're going to have Matan Torah, you're going to have the Gilui Shechina in the biggest way imaginable, but there has to be some holding back. Now, what was the Medrash said, so what was the additional second warning? What was, we said, the second warning added something. So we can't really relate to this so much, maybe because what were they being warned of? But it was that they were going to see on the mountain things that people had never seen before, and a godless and a Gilui Shechina that was totally mind-boggling. So says the Medrash, they were going to be tempted to gaze at the mountain. So what's wrong with gazing at the mountain? The gazing in this context means they would start to make calculations in their mind, what they thought they saw, what it could imply, what it could mean, and that would lead them to a dangerous place. Means you can have exposure to something, and then your mind can start working beyond that. And that was where they were being warned. Two things. Physically keep off the mountain. That was the first warning. And the second one, even if you come to the mountain, and even if you see what you see, but you have to stop imagining beyond what you understand. And this is a recurring theme in the Chumash. We find by Nadav Avihu, one of the Pshatim, is that they went too far with wanting to be too close to Hashem, on the Musag of Havan of Hashem that they weren't Mesugal for. And also the famous Gemara in Chagiga, which will focus on one of the four people who went into the Pardes. The Gemara in Chagiga says, Arba nichnasu the Pardes. That was Ben Azai, Ben Zoyma, Achav, Rabbi Akiva. We're going to look at Ben Zoyma. So Rabbi Akiva gave them an interesting introduction to this trip into the Pardes. He said to them, roughly speaking, when we get closer and closer, and you think you're seeing water, don't say Mayim Mayim. Don't say that. So what does that mean? I mean, I can't explain to you Kabbalah. It's a Kabbalah Gemara, but it seems to be you're going to see something, you're going to think it's reality, and I'm telling you, don't make the declaration what you think it is, that it's Mayim Mayim. Don't say that. So, okay, that's the introduction. In they go, how everyone gets there. So we say, Ben Azai hates its mace. Ben Azai looked at what he was seeing there, and he died. On that, the Pasuk says, Yahweh Inei Hashem, Amavis Chasidov. So this was not considered apparently a flaw, but so if he died. So then comes Ben Zoyma, and it says, hates its Benifka. He was damaged. So I'll read you the Pasuk that said about him. We'll finish and come back to Ben Zoyma. So it says in the Pasuk there in Mishle, Dvash Matzosa Echo Dayeko Pen Tis Be'enu V'Hakesoi, which means, if you find honey and you eat it, eat until the point where you've had like the bit that you need to have, lest you eat too much, lest you get satisfied from it and you vomit. Interesting Pasuk. Okay. Acher, so he was Elisha ben Avuya, he went off the derek, it's in the tears, and Rabbi Akiva, Yotze b'Sholem. He went out in peace. So what happened with Ben Zoyma? Ben Zoyma, he was being told, what's with honey? Well, is anybody, you don't have to embarrass yourself, but is anybody who doesn't like honey? Honey is the thing which is historically, okay, now we've got all the purified sugars, so maybe you could find me something sweeter, but it was the defining thing that was like the sweet food, the thing which was a luxury item of sweetness. And yet Ben Zoyma was saying, he went in, he saw something so, so sweet, so delicious, so unbelievably good, but he consumed too much of it to the point where he vomited. It damaged him. So that's this idea that there are things which we're going to have access to, ideas we have access to, which maybe we should say, we should stop thinking into it. Now, where does this come up? I mean, hopefully here at start the day, you're hearing pretty down-to-earth things. You're not hearing things that are going to make you think into the worlds of the Pardes. But I'll tell you, someone pointed out that although there's an amazing thing going on in the world, which is the multiplication of recorded shirim available, thousands and thousands of shirim from the greatest rabbanim around the world, but there are a couple of downsides. So the first one is relevant to this, and then I'll come back to a second risk of it. The first one is, sometimes you end up hearing shirim because you can hear anybody you want, and you hear shirim that sometimes you're not the audience. As you're sitting there listening, you know he's not talking to me. For example, the level is too high or too low. I've heard shirim where the person was speaking to bochrim about why they shouldn't use drugs, and I thought, okay, I know there are bochrim who use drugs, but if you're a bocher who doesn't use drugs, Baruch Hashem, which there are quite a few of them. I hope almost all of them. So why do they need to know? Why do they need to know about this, that there are Bachurim who are involved with this, that they have to have the idea? I see that such a thing exists and what's wrong with it, and go into those kinds of machshavas. And then sometimes you also hear shirim which touch on Kabbalah. This is not the other extreme, going too high for us. And then you hear things which it sounds like Hashem loves, which He does. He loves us so much, but it diminishes the obligations of Torah. Person's told how much Hashem, you keep emphasizing Hashem's love to a point. I once met a man who said to me, which he's a person who's learned some Torah, he says something very strange to me. He said, "You know what I'm learning nowadays?" I said, "No." He said, "I'm learning Kala lessons." I said, "Wait a minute, you're a man. You're supposed to be learning Chosin lessons, not Kala lessons. What kind of weirdness is this?" So he says, what I'm telling you is I'm learning Kabbalah." So I said, "How is that?" He said, "Because the Kala, Hashem is the Chosin, and Klal Yisrael is the Kala, so that's what I'm learning. I'm learning Kala lessons." I thought he shouldn't go around telling people that because they get the wrong end of the stick. But whatever it was, but the point was he's focusing now on this idea of the love of Hashem. And as I spoke to him, I could see he probably should have spent some more time learning Basa V'Cholav or some Masechtas and Shas. Because although it was interesting, and there are shirim that gets hundreds of people to come and listen to Inyani Kabbalah, but who says that we're the intended audience for that? And the chances are we're probably not. Anyway, so that's one of the risks. I see, though, we're running short on time. So the other risk of these recorded shirim is that people end up learning alone. That means here at Baruch Hashem, and even the people online who are joining us, but you're a part of a bigger thing. You're a part of a Masura. You're part of listening to, having shaychus to a real person, not to a recorded image. And we know that Torah Barabbim is gewaldic important. Because I'm so short of time, I'm just going to have to summarize it. We know Rabbi Akiva was challenged by Papas Ben Yehuda, "What are you doing teaching Torah?" So he said, the famous mashal of the fox and the fish. So he said, it's like life itself, we have to teach. But you could say he didn't answer the question. Papas Ben Yehuda asked him, "Why are you teaching Torah Barabbim?" And he's answering, "Because we need Torah to live." But you understand Rabbi Akiva's answer. He says, "Yeah, but not teaching Torah Barabbim, that in itself is a risk to life. If we're not teaching Torah Barabbim, then that's no different than the risk that you imagine just by not learning Torah." So, because we are out of time, so this idea also we see by Har Sinai, that they came ke'ish echad ve'lev echad, that they were all together. And the unity of the Torah and is an essential ingredient in the Hatzlacha of Torah. And we say, v'lehavterecha kamoicha ze'klal gadol b'Torah, your shaykhus with other Yidden, that's what brings out the greatness of Torah as well. So although I'm not here to bash anything, people want to listen to Shirim, it's certainly better than listening to a lot of other things, l'havdil elef avdolas. But the point is you have to make boundaries. You have to know, what are you listening to? Who are you listening to? Are you the audience? And also, that this connection that you have to Torah, you shouldn't think, I can take it how I like. No, you're supposed to have a Rebbe. You're supposed to have shaykhus to other people when you learn. And you also, one other boundary, and I'll finish with this, is the idea that we're supposed to have gratitude to the one who gave us the Torah. Like we say, Kulana Yodei Shemecha and Birkas Torah, we were trying to know your name. In other words, one of the boundaries of Torah is not to take Torah the way I want it, which is, I just want the information. I want to be a knacker. I want to know the daf. Fantastic. Are you getting to know Hashem as part of the process? Are you being makar tov that Hashem gave us the Torah? He's a hamalamed Torah lamo Yisrael. He's teaching the Torah to us. He's sitting down and bothering to teach us the Torah. All of these things are meant to be a part and package of Torah. You can't have it the way you want it. You have it the way that Hashem intends the gift to be. So I'll finish with that. I don't want to keep the next speaker waiting. When she all be zeichet to be a scale tzedek b'mehirah v'yameinu.